Welcome to That Could Work on a Mission Field, a podcast of Mission Nation Publishing. This is Sarah Siang. Here we highlight and speak with missionaries to America about the very present and growing mission fields that exist across the nation. Join us to learn from these missionaries as they push forward to spread the good news of Jesus Christ in their diverse communities. Today, I am joined by Reverend Dr. Terry Chan out of San Francisco, California. Pastor Terry is, I think, getting up there in our church body's list of experts, especially when it comes to just multi-ethnicity within the church and striving for that. He recently got his doctorate of intercultural studies and is doing well to share his work among our church, and for us to learn from him is very valuable. So I look forward to kind of digging into his expertise today. Pastor Terry, how are you doing today?
I am fine, Sarah. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Well, why don't we start off by just an introduction to who you are, a little bit about yourself and your family?
Yeah, wonderful. A little bit about myself. I am currently serving as a pastor and lead missionary in San Francisco. And it is a multi-ethnic parish of multiple congregations, languages, locations, and ministries. And what that all means is that in our sphere of influence, my congregation engages five different languages on a regular basis in ministry: Cantonese, Mandarin, Spanish, Amharic, and English. And so that is my current ministry. I've been described as both a first generation immigrant because I was born in Hong Kong, but my family has been in the United States since 1869. And so I'm actually also a fifth generation Asian American. So that's kind of a unique thing. So I've had family coming back and forth from America to Asia for many decades now. I'm also I'm married to my dear wife, Christine, and together we have five children and seven grandchildren. So we are very blessed in that way as well.
Wonderful. You're getting old, Pastor Terry. That's a lot of kids and grandkids. Thank you for being here again. And so let's jump right into it. I am curious again to hear your take on everything. I think there's a lot of knowledge that we can gain from you. So our kind of start off question is always, what energizes a congregation to reach ethnic groups different than their own?
You know, there is something that will energize individuals and congregations that is very important to recognize. And the first and foremost is that it is a spiritual event that somehow through scripture, through the work of God in our own hearts, we come to a realization that there is great passion for reaching out to people from a different culture. They are in our midst. And so to engage in reaching out to someone different than our own culture, it's something not that we just decide we want to do. It's not based on a program. It is God speaking to us, and it is a spiritual recognition of that fact. And so there are so many scripture passages that are there that remind us of these things. And I call it the four G's. It's really recognizing that it is a desire that God puts in our hearts because it is God's desire as well. It is based on the Great Commission to go and make disciples. It's about the great commandment to love God and to love our neighbor as ourselves. And it is also recognizing that it's a picture of heaven. It's to the glory of God that we are able to see and understand that heaven is going to be a glorious picture. And so that is why we might want to reach out to a culture other than our own.
You gave us great examples from the Bible. Obviously, the commandments were given as to go out and to make disciples, right? Now, there are a lot of good reasons or a lot of good reasons to want to do so, but what are some wrong reasons to why we would reach another culture, another ethnic group? I'm sure it can get very kind of dicey. You might be a little bit unsure here and there when you first approach something, especially for the first time.
Sure. Well, there are wrong reasons and there are better reasons. There are also common excuses as well. So some of the wrong reasons that individuals and congregations or ministries have for reaching a culture other than your own includes things like, we need more people in the church. Our church is dying. Our church is empty. We need the rent. The pastor says we have to do it, among other wrong reasons. And I'm sure people have a list to add to the ones I've mentioned, but there's also a lot more common excuses given to why we don't do it, such as we need an ethnic pastor first, or there is no ethnic pastor available, so we can't do it. We don't speak the language. We don't have the funds. Let another church do it. Or another church is already doing it, so we don't need to. It's the pastor's job to do it, or it's something the synod or a district needs to do, not us. Or we might even think the ethnic population is too small. Maybe you are out in a rural area, or the fear that, well, if we reach out to these other ethnicities, other people from different cultures, we might actually succeed and they might outnumber us, then what? Things like, well, if we reach out to them and they come to our church, do they get to use the kitchen? Do we count them as our members, or do they have their own church? And so the list of excuses, some of the worries and fears, they're kind of endless. And we use those as excuses for why we don't want to reach out to a culture other than our own.
Yeah. You got really real in all of those excuses and wrong reasons. And I don't think it's good. It's just so real, because that's the kind of things that people think, but we don't always say aloud, because it's, you know, don't want to hurt people's feelings or don't want to say what you're actually thinking situation.
these are all actual reasons I've heard and
that
seen.
You've heard.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've actually seen and experienced these.
Right. You know, I think what a lot of that comes down to in those excuses is the barriers and the discomfort. Would you share, maybe in your experience, good examples of when people have successfully and graciously broken through those barriers and what has helped to do so? And I guess that kind of goes into how we reach out to other cultures, right? So maybe we can step into that as well.
Well, things that have worked well is when congregations have been able to collaborate in forming partnerships. And so in my own current ministry, we collaborate with a Amharic Ethiopian congregation and a Spanish congregation, as well as a developing Chinese ministry. And so that collaboration is a really wonderful thing. And it also speaks very strongly to our community that we are very welcoming of people from various ethnic backgrounds and various language groups. And those are all important pictures for people in our community to see. Those kinds of things is what the church can do is by collaborating and partnering and lowering the artificial barriers that we often put up in ministry. And we kind of think, well, that's your church and this is my church. And so, we don't want to overlap or conflict with others in terms of ministry. Those are artificial barriers that we put up ourselves.
That's really interesting. Artificial barriers. I think there's real barriers, right, that we can see, perhaps because it is a barrier, but it doesn't mean it's you can't overcome it. But language, right? That's that's an actual natural barrier, and it's something to be considered. But then there's levels of, like you said, artificial barriers where it's just kind of like the making things up to maybe prove, quote unquote, why it would be hard, basically. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's a comfort thing of you don't want to change or you don't want to do anything that's a little bit more difficult. Do you have any words of encouragement to kind of work through that piece? I'm sure you hear that quite often.
Well, I think very key is relationship and leadership. And so I'm developing something called intercultural relational leadership development. And it's about having leadership and relationships be on a very common equal level. When it comes to then some of the things you mentioned, like the language, we often think it's, well, just the language, I don't speak it, but it's really about relationship and communication. And so, there's the native language we speak, but there's also heart language. There's the spoken language, but there's also unspoken language. There's verbal and nonverbal communication. And those are all things that we need to cultivate and become stronger. So we can speak maybe a different language, but how are we actually communicating? And are we really getting the message across? Are we really hearing it correctly? And even if we don't speak the language, we can actually communicate with people through other means and to recognize that. So that's where the relationship is very important, because then if there are things like language that is a barrier, it means we need to cultivate the relationships, learning to be more patient in how we express things, making sure we check and double check what the meaning is, and looking at ways in which to foster those relationships. I do know many people who have relationships where the language is a barrier, but through other means of communication, relationships are very powerful. I'll use my congregation again as an example. We have the largest food pantry in the city and county of San Francisco. We have 750 individuals who come by every week for food. And many of them, I would say even 90% of them do not speak English, or English is a second language. And many of them are Chinese speaking, Cantonese, Mandarin, and Spanish speaking. And so even though there is a language barrier, because we don't have many Chinese speakers in our congregation, we're able to reach out to them through the nonverbal actions and through the patient relational development of things. And so we have people who aren't able to communicate very well with one another, but they will greet them every week with a hug, which is just kind of a strange thing to see. they can't express anything, but they express their gratitude for mm-hmm. our food pantry by their nonverbal actions. And you know, they do things like make something from home and bring and share it with the food pantry leaders or with others. And they hang out in our parking lot, and there's a community of people who are just hanging around and developing their own relationship, their own little social circles there. And so that's a very interesting phenomenon to see.
You know, I actually enjoy that example because I think in many cultures, for us, the Asian culture, right? And food is such a good way to break the barriers, but it's also, like you said, nonverbal. You don't need to speak the same language, but when you sit down and have a meal with somebody, what that means for people is relational, and you're building a relationship without even probably saying a word, honestly. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
In the actual equipping of pastors and congregations, like, let's take it from kind of the first step to a congregation that has not done this before. Their pastor has not done this before. And, you know, they're wanting to, they feel that encouragement and that passion to do so. But what kind of tools and resources and advice would you give to help them prepare to do that kind of work that they haven't touched before? Like, what does that look like?
Well, once there's the spiritual recognition and the spiritual passion to do this, that God is inspiring us to do this, it's recognizing that there are so many ways to do it, but it's not always simply a program, but it's more of a growing process. And so we recognize that people from a different culture, they're here in America because they're part of the diaspora that God has ordained the time and place for them to be. And so they are here in the United States. And so we have a ministry to those who have come to the United States, and we are to recognize who they are, discover who they are, and where are they now. So the first step would be to really recognize that factor. We have a mission to the people. And who are they? They can be new immigrants, they can be migrants, they can be tourist visitors who end up staying in the country. There are refugees, there are settled immigrants who have been here for many generations, like my background. You have now professional entrepreneurs who are coming here because of pursuing education or enterprise. And you have college students, you have ministry to that next generation of people from a different culture, and understanding that people are actually bicultural in many ways, both their native culture and maybe American culture. And there's a continuum in which people kind of fall. They can be very native culture with some practices, and they can also be very American culture with other factors.
That's me.
Yes.
I'm such a blend. I just want to throw that out there. And like you said, so many people are, especially in these younger second, third generations of now being here in the States, it's such a blend, and it's not even a fine line. But anyway, go ahead.
Yes, it is a definite continuum. And so that's, you know, recognizing and identifying who what people group and where are they at this time. Mm-hmm. And that really helps you then dictate a little more about how you go about reaching out to them. The second is a mission through the diaspora. In other words, it's not just reaching out to these people, but then how do we equip and disciple them to then reach out to others in their own social circles, rather than us trying to do all the ministry? Are we able to identify some leaders from other cultures and equip them to do the outreach through their own social network, through their family? And that then removes the language requirement on our part, because we're equipping leaders who already know the language and the culture and already have social circles to reach people that we don't have. A third would be something called missions by and beyond the diaspora. And so we continue to equip people to reach other people. And so as we are reaching out to people, we want to make sure that they grow in a sense of, it doesn't stop with them. It is also a need and desire for them to then reach beyond their own people group. And then a fourth one is missions with the diaspora. So we want to be doing missions with the people around us. We want to develop those partnerships and collaboration with others. And this is what I mentioned earlier about partnering with an Ethiopian congregation, a multi-ethnic congregation, a Hispanic congregation, and Chinese people. Being able to partner together as a congregation, as a circuit, as several congregations, as a team of people from various congregations. Doing missions with people is very key. And that's a part of the leadership dynamic that is there. So again, it's relationships and leaderships that can be the key to doing these kinds of ministry, reaching people from a culture different from your own.
So missions to, missions through, missions by and beyond, and then missions with others, all with relationships and leadership at the center of that.
Yes, yes, very much so. And then there's a strategy as well that I've been developing and working with, and this applies to many cultures, but I'll use the Asian culture as an example, a multi-Asian dynamic. And I'll give a plug to our upcoming multi-Asian gathering at the 2022 Multi-Ethnic Symposium. We'll be launching our inaugural gathering with multi-Asian leaders and participants from all cultures. But this strategy that I'm working on for multi-Asian ministry is, I don't think it's really a new concept, but it's gathering people from various Asian cultures who are primarily English speaking or bilingual, and using that as a core group for ministry and developing a ministry, a congregation that serves them well. The multi-Asian gathering already enjoy each other. They share the different variety of foods and the different the similarities of culture and things of that nature. And so there's a ministry where that is the center. There's a future for their children, but they can also bridge backwards to their native language groups. So if they need to utilize someone to reach people who speak Korean, they can do so, or Chinese or Japanese or whatever language it is, they can still bridge back because they still have connection with those people. So this multi-Asian group of ministry people can plan forward and reach backwards for ministry. And it's really kind of a half step, because within another generation or two, that multi-Asian group evolves and becomes multi-ethnic anyway. It's a matter of time and other factors in there. I'm trying to see if this can be further developed and learn from different groups and how we can put something together that can be helpful for those who are interested in reaching other cultures.
That's a very interesting strategy. And I think it's important to note that grouping can be very helpful and strategic while also very much valuing the individual ethnic groups. Because we've talked about before in our multi-Asian gathering meetings, it's like, oh, we're already actually very multi-ethnic, but coming together as a core group, like you said, builds upon that goal towards full multi-ethnicity within the church. So right. I think that's a great component, and the forward and backward component is very versatile. So thank you for sharing that strategy. Any final thoughts and encouragements for our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in particular, and anyone listening?
Well, it's recognizing that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is about 93% white English speaking, which is perfectly fine. There's nothing inherently bad about that. But our country, America, is becoming more and more diverse and multi-ethnic. And it's really about how can we reflect more of the demographic population of America to our synod. And so growing in diversity is important simply because by the year 2042, the United States will become a majority-minority nation where there is no majority group. Everyone will be a minority. And in fact, that has already been achieved for those who are under age 21. And so those who are under age 21, they are already a majority-minority population. So all those being born the last couple of decades are from a ethnic minority, as we call it. And so it's the encouragement that this is something God desires, and it is something that we are well able to carry out because that's God's desire, and we're simply following what God desires to do. And he is the one who will work in us and through us to bring fruit to his kingdom.
Yes, and I think we have such good news to share. Now it's just a matter of figuring out how to do that, right? And we appreciate all of your insights and your knowledge and strategies into doing that, because we need leaders like yourself to help us get there. So really appreciate your time today, Pastor Terry. Thank you, and appreciate it.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of That Could Work on a Mission Field, a podcast of Mission Nation Publishing. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and learned something new today. Until next time, this is Sarah Siang, and remember, you are now entering the mission field.